Welcome to the Sexual Mindfulness Project podcast, where we talk about creating an intentional relationship and how to find joy in slowing down, letting go of judgment, and connecting more deeply with your partner. Welcome to this session of the Sexual Mindfulness Project podcast. I'm here today with Jeremy Bowden. Dr. Bowden is a professor at Utah Valley University. He got his undergraduate degree at BYU, then received his MFT from Loma Linda, and finally his PhD in human development from Texas Tech. So welcome. So pleased to have you here today.
Thank you so much. I've been looking forward to this opportunity.
Well, another interesting story that I can tell about Jeremy is that he was also one of the facilitators in our first intervention on sexual mindfulness. So he really understands what our aims here on this website are, that we're trying to bring people to a better understanding of how to create stronger relationships through slowing down and being more aware and less judgmental of themselves and their partner. So I really appreciated all of your work in that intervention. That was fun.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you for letting me be a part of it. It was quite an honor to be a part of that project.
Well, I know that part of your specialty, I mean, you have a number of areas that you've researched and that you teach on, but one area that I particularly am interested in, and I hope you'll share some of your wisdom with us today, is about sexual debut. And if you could just maybe describe, first of all, what is sexual debut? And then in what ways does sexual debut really impact your sexual experience moving forward?
Yeah. So sexual debut is kind of a researchy word, term, if you will, as far as the first time somebody becomes sexually intimate or has a sexually intimate experience, engages in that behavior. The area of research that I look at is really couples who are in a committed relationship, more specifically married, that are experiencing sexual intimacy and more specifically sexual intercourse for the first time. There's lots and lots of research out there about adolescents and young adults experiencing sex for the first time. And usually it's kind of in a dating or a committed relationship that's non-marital. And so I wanted to look at what happens for those who decided to be sexually abstinent before marriage, and they're going through a lot of transitions. What was that experience like for them? What was helpful for them? What hindered them? And so that's really what I'm interested in. And there's not a lot of research. I mean, it was very difficult to find any research out there about it. And so I'm excited because I'm adding to a part of the literature that has been pretty bleak over the last, forever. So,
yeah, I love that you're doing this research because it's particularly important in our culture and in lots of cultures, in lots of religious cultures, where we do wait until marriage to engage in that sexual experience. And so we're waiting. And then not only do we get married and we're now living together, but we're also experiencing sex for the first time and all of the development that brings with it.
Yeah. So not only that, you're exactly right. The new marriage, new sexual experience. And then also, people even at that age are kind of going through personal changes as far as just going to college, new jobs, leaving the home. And so there's so many changes that are kind of compounded into a very brief period of their life. And so it's expected to be challenging for some.
That's really an intense period of a lot of people's lives.
So your other question that you asked was about in what ways are sexual debut important to the rest of our sexual experience, which I think is such a great question. And as I thought about this, as you said this, and I think about it, anytime we have as humans kind of a novel stimuli, a novel experience, and then you pair that with an emotion, we're going to remember it, whatever that is, especially if it's paired with an emotion. And so if you're moving into this experience, this new sexual experience that you've never had, And there's probably some excitement, there's some anxiousness, there's some uneasiness, some trepidation. You're going to remember that. And so that's why, in my view, why it's so important to kind of prepare for this in the best way possible, prepare for this experience. In fact, some of our research has found that about half of our couples said that they talked about moving into this experience openly. And that's kind of scary to me, to think that you're going to embark on one of the most vulnerable experiences you've ever had, and you're not talking about it as a couple, which goes back to why it's such an important piece. And it can kind of create a template moving forward and a positive trajectory or a negative trajectory going forward. At the same time, I want to make sure that we don't put too much emphasis on this, that we're saying, oh my gosh, this is the, you know, if we don't do it right, everything's messed up. That is, nothing could be further from the truth. I want to make sure that couples are prepared for this and come with a wealth of knowledge and understanding and comfortability with it. But at the same time, knowing that, hey, if this doesn't go well, there's some things that we can do.
Yeah, that's great. I think it's interesting how sometimes we are willing to share our bodies, but we don't even talk about it. We don't talk with our partner about this really intense experience that we're planning on having with each other or that we just had. And so communication is really lacking oftentimes.
Yeah, that's an excellent point, Shalom. You actually brought up something I hadn't really thought of, and I paired it that, you know, we can look at this experience that most of the time people are going to be nude. I mean, let's just assume that. And there's probably a handful of people that have seen them nude in their entire life. And you're now going into this with somebody that's going to see your body, experience your body, and you're not talking about it. Like, what's happened here? Where's the disconnect?
Yeah, I think oftentimes it maybe indicates some other problems that may be occurring in their relationship where they're not very vulnerable with each other. They're not very willing to communicate these sensitive feelings that they have, or these fears, or, you know, joy or hope, whatever it is. And they're pretty closed.
Well said. Exactly. Yeah.
So what happens if in these experiences where people are having sex for the first time, and what when the circumstance that we're talking about is after marriage, what happens if it's not a good experience? What if it just turns out to be a total fail, right? We both feel like, boy, that did not go well, and we're maybe feeling a little guilt or embarrassment. What advice do you give people who that is their first sexual experience?
Again, great question. Let me answer that kind of in two pieces and start with just a brief story that a couple summers ago, I went on a backpacking trip. I am not an outdoors person. I do not like I like the outdoors, but I don't like long multi-day backpacking trips. But I had a good friend who, several good friends who prepared me pretty well for it. And so when I came up against obstacles, I expected it. I'm like, yeah, I knew this was going to happen and I'm prepared for it. And so part of my answer to that question is, first, that's why, kind of going back to what we talked about before, why preparing for this is such an important piece, because you can anticipate some potential stumbling blocks that when they come in and there is an unpleasant or uncomfortable experience, you can say, oh, well, this is okay. We learned about this. This is common. This happens. There's a way to fix it. And so that's going to reduce your anxiety. So when I was on my backpacking trip and I got a blister, I thought, oh, well, yeah, this is very common. It's okay. I sat down, got out the medical equipment, taped it up, and I was fine. I mean, I didn't freak out. I didn't say I'm done. I didn't say this is going to be a terrible trip. I said, no, I knew this was going to happen, and off I went. And so now, with that being said, and we'll talk later about what you can do to kind of prepare and things to discuss and expectations, but going back to your question specifically, and I know this sounds kind of like maybe a non-sexy answer, but a lot of it comes down to communication. But you set that forth and say, if we do have a breakdown where there's uncomfortableness, it's unpleasant, how are we going to discuss this? What is that going to look like? Kind of having a contingency plan, because the likelihood of you having a misstep is fairly high. If this is the first time you're ever doing something like this, the likelihood is pretty high. So just know that that's normal, and validate each other. Just validate, reflect about, okay, what happened for you? What is going on for you right now? That, you know, those terms sometimes you think you coined, but you're not sure. The term that I feel like I coined is compassionate curiosity. And that you move into this discussion with compassion and with curiosity. And so learning about, okay, what is going on for you right now? What are the emotions that are going on? What are your thoughts right now? How are you viewing me? How can I be more helpful for you? Here's how you can be helpful for me. And just be curious about your partner's experience. And it's really about creating that safety, you know, and that would be kind of my answer to it. Knowing that, one, you can prepare for it. Two, that it's likely going to happen. So what is your contingency plan as far as communicating about it? And then to create some compassionate curiosity around that.
I really like that answer. I really love the term compassionate curiosity. I think it emphasizes this idea that let's go back to the basics, right? Let's go back to what we do know about our relationship. We're friends. We care about each other. We want this to be a pleasant experience for both people. So it went wrong. So this was a big fail. What can we learn from this? I really like that.
I like that what you said there. What can we learn from this? What can we take away from this and do differently, do better? And I would say also focus on some of the positives. Talk about, okay, well, this is what went well. I know this part didn't go so well, but gosh, I really loved this part and let's make sure we do this. And so, yeah, there's a part of it that has to focus on the positive as well.
Yeah. And maybe even just bring in a little humor, like, boy, that was funny. Yes. Can you believe that this happened or, you know, whatever. And just use a little bit of humor to kind of lighten the mood.
Exactly. And I'll actually talk about that a little bit later. So great comment.
Good. Well, so, you know, you mentioned this before, but let's follow up on this. Just creating expectations for this experience, especially when so many new things are happening all at once, right? You're getting married, you're having sex, you're creating this life together. Like you mentioned, there may be a number of other life changes that are going on at this time. How can young couples, I'm assuming they're young, they may be older when this happens, but typically it's young couples. How can they create healthy expectations around this first time sexual experience?
Yeah, this is something that is kind of a passion within my passion as far as talking about these expectations. And I think a big piece of this is kind of what you're saying, becoming more comfortable around talking about this. That's kind of the first step is, can we have an open conversation that's safe, that fits within our values, and can we be open about this? Can we create some comfortability about this? So that's kind of the baseline of it. Then beyond that, in some of my research and some of our findings and the readings that I've done, one of the things that we have to understand, and I don't know where this started, but I always tell couples, because I work a lot with premarital couples in my private practice. And one of the things that I tell them that for some of them is kind of news, I say, here's something you need to know. You don't have to have sex on the first night. Let's just blow that myth out of the water. You do not even have to have it on the second night. But at some point, you're probably going to want to start to move towards that sometime on your honeymoon. But there is no rule. There's no law that says you have to make love. Now, you probably want to share that with your partner, not while you're on your way to the honeymoon suite, that you're not going to have sex that night. Yeah. That's not a good time to discuss that. Probably several weeks or months before that. But that's going to be something. Just know there's other things that you can do to be intimate, to be sexual, and to create, kind of slowly move into this. The other thing that I often will tell couples, and I'll even do kind of a kinetic thing. I'll say, okay, open your arms. And I want you to imagine the word awkward sitting in front of you. And I just want you to give that word a big, big hug. And I want you to embrace that word. It's going to be a little awkward. And you just have to own that, embrace it, and have some humor around it, like you said earlier. This is new. You've never done this before. And so you just have to know going into this, it's going to be a little different. It's going to be a little awkward, which leads to the next point about one of the most common things that we heard in our research, as far as our some of our quantitative research, was that a lot of people thought after going through it, they said one of the things that was a little disappointing for them is they thought it was going to be like the movies. If you've grown up in an environment where you don't hear about sex, we don't learn about sex, you don't have any experience around sex, your only frame of reference is movies and kind of what they do. And I'm not talking about like explicit things, but just, you know, romantic movies where they go into the bedroom, everything's great, and they come out and they're happy and things are wonderful. And a lot of people said, I just thought it was going to be like that. And I was a little disappointed. So know that it's not going to be like the movies. It's really not. There's no editor, you know, you're going to be in different moods. Someone may fall off the bed, you know, and there's going to be different things that are going to happen.
Right.
And another thing is to go in with also, it's going to be kind of that bracing the awkward. It's going to be a little messy. That was a common thing that people said. They didn't realize how messy it was going to be. There's fluids involved. Okay. There's fluids involved. And so that's a piece that a lot of people thought, wow, I didn't expect the mess. I mean, we're not talking about like days of cleaning up or anything, but definitely have a towel on hand. And another thing that I would say to couples as far as having healthy expectations is sometimes people kind of build up this idea of we're going to get to do everything, every sexual thing that we haven't been able to do. And I've been thinking about this for so long. And in Chicago every year, there's a music festival called Lollapalooza, where they bring in all these bands. And I mean, it's just eclectic bands from all over, different styles. And so this is not a sexapalooza, okay? You're not going to be trying every move, every position you've ever thought about, read about, anything like that. This is a time for you just to be with each other, to create this new experience. It's not a time to try and, you know, do everything possible. That you need to take that off your expectation. And yeah, so that would be some of the things that I would encourage couples around. And, you know, make sure that you're engaging in a lot of foreplay. Take it slow. Be patient with each other, with yourself. That's going to be a big piece of it.
I really love that, because I think underlying everything that you're saying is this idea of being intentional, slowing it down so that you can actually notice the details of what it is you're experiencing instead of rushing right to sexual intercourse, you know, and feeling like that's the goal and we've got to meet this goal on the first night or, you know, the third night, whatever. And I like that because it really meshes with mindfulness, right? Just being more mindful about this experience, especially this first experience where you probably haven't seen each other naked. And that alone is going to be a pretty new and arousing experience. And so if you rush right through that, you've really missed out on some of the sweetness of those emotions and the expressions that you could share with each other.
Absolutely. And that's a great way to frame it within that mindfulness and slowing this whole experience down. Beautiful ad there.
Those are great expectations. So I think we might actually write those expectations down and put them in a blog so that parents who are helping their children transition or the young adults who are transitioning can take a look at that, remind themselves of it, and maybe have this discussion that you suggested, have this discussion with their spouse or their fiance about what healthy expectations might look like around the wedding night and the honeymoon.
Absolutely.
So one other question, and this is kind of a common problem for newlyweds, especially newlyweds who have waited to have sex until they're married. Premature ejaculation is a pretty common problem and sometimes can maybe even set a negative pattern in a young couple's sexual experience. What sorts of advice or helpful hints do you give young couples to deal with that problem?
Yeah. And I love that you said at the very beginning, it's common. It's something that may happen and is likely to happen, especially the first time. And so going in with that knowledge can be very helpful as far as not being surprised or feeling like something's wrong or you did something wrong. And really, I think it's important to explain as far as premature ejaculation. From a clinical perspective, it's the idea of ejaculating or reaching orgasm for the male or female, but more so premature ejaculation is assigned more towards the male. It's usually before you wanted to or within about a minute. Like that's the general kind of clinical terms that we have around that. But we also know from the research that a lot of it comes from this sense of anxiety. There's usually not something physically wrong with you. It's not something organic. It's not something physical. It can be, but it's usually not, which is why one of the remedies that you can do is really, and this is kind of a theme that we've been discussing, is have an open conversation about it and just discuss it and create a comfortableness around this. One of the things that's so important, especially for the wife, is to create safety around this. Don't tease him. Do not shame him. Anything like that is going to exacerbate the issue. So creating some comfortability around it, some openness, some safety around it is going to do wonders. And being patient around it. Now, there's some things you can do. You know, obviously, if it becomes a problem long term where you're not able to really sustain more than a minute ever, then you may want to consult your, you know, primary care physician or a urologist around that. But you may also couple that with a discussion with a sex therapist, because they can be very helpful. They can offer some techniques, some things to improve that, especially as a couple. And doing that as a couple. You know, one of the things I often tell couples is this part of your relationship, you should become a sexually intimate team. You're teammates in this and working towards this and becoming better and helping each other, being supportive. Now, with that being said, there are some remedies that you can do. And I mentioned, you know, going to the doctors might be, if it becomes a long-term problem or a consistent problem, I should say. But there's exercises you can do that can delay that ejaculation. Wearing condoms can be helpful in this to kind of limit some of this sensitivity. There's even condoms that come with lubrication within it or some ointment that can numb around that area. But in the end, a lot of this can be remedied through just a supportive partner, working as a team. And I will say, let's put a shout out for sexual mindfulness, yes. Being mindful and slowing this down. Being mindful of your arousal, being mindful of your body is it's actually a very common technique to help men overcome premature ejaculation, is to be more sexually mindful. So that's a big part of it.
Those are great suggestions. And I love your description of just being a team and working at this together so that the man isn't experiencing this burden of shame or guilt that he's done something wrong. Most likely, it's just a matter of being new to a sexual experience and being so highly aroused that it's difficult to control the level of arousal that you're experiencing, and you just, you know, move into orgasm quicker than you intended to.
Yes.
The other thing that I don't know what you think of this, but I think sometimes it might be helpful to just go ahead and understand that the man may have a premature ejaculation, but that doesn't mean it has to be over, right? You can continue arousing each other, and possibly just through that short refractory period that he has, as he is able to then again feel heightened arousal so that he has an erection and can engage in intercourse again, that might give just the right amount of time for the woman to catch up to his level of arousal. He got there very quickly, but let's use this time now that he's got this little refractory period and help both of you then get to the same level of arousal.
I love that. That is such great insight, Shalom. I really like that.
Yeah, I mean, my one fear with premature ejaculation is the negative pattern that sometimes it causes in young couples, that maybe it seems like both people get discouraged. He feels, you know, discouraged because he's not performing, you know, with air quotes, he's not performing well.
Yes.
And she gets discouraged because maybe she's not experiencing the level of arousal and pleasure that she was hoping to. And so instead, if we just kind of break that cycle, that pattern you mentioned, you know, slowing it down, being a little more mindful of what each other's needs are, and then continuing. It can be one of those kind of funny experiences that we talk about when we're in midlife, saying, oh, remember when this was a struggle? Well, not anymore.
Not anymore. Yes, definitely.
Great. Well, thank you. That was wonderful. So one other question that you may be really well positioned to answer is, how do newlyweds who, again, have waited to have sex until they are married, how do they deal with the occasional feelings of guilt that might come from now engaging in sex for so long? You know, before marriage, it had been off limits, and now they're married and it still kind of feels like it should be off limits, but it's not.
Yeah, it's such a good question. And it's a very nuanced question because there's lots of ways you could go with that in understanding why that might come up. I guess I would start answering that with the idea of some level of preparation beforehand is going to be helpful in this process. And really the thing that I talk about a lot of my classes, because I teach here at Utah Valley University, I teach a course called Teaching Human Sexuality. And we spend the first couple of weeks just understanding our own sexuality. And they have to do an assignment called Creating a Healthy Sexual Self-Concept. And that's a big part of this, is to start to own that piece of you, that part of you that is a sexual being. We are born, literally born, with the capacity to be sexual. We know this, and we're born with all of these organs and these body parts to be sexual. And so that's a big piece of owning that piece, that I am a sexual being. I have both the capacity to receive and to give pleasure. So if we start there, that's a good place to begin. And that understanding that sex is not this peripheral, tangential part outside of there, but it is a piece of who we are. And from a religious perspective, I mean, as far as if we're talking about guilt, a lot of times the guilt comes from a religious upbringing or religious mindset or ideology, knowing that your maker, or that God created you to feel arousal, to feel, experience an orgasm. And so would you feel guilty about working hard in a class and studying and getting an A and walking out of this class or a test and saying, wow, should I feel proud of getting an A? Yeah, you should, because you're intelligent. You worked hard. You studied for this. And so you shouldn't go back and say, oh, I feel kind of guilty about this. No, you've put in the time and effort, and you were built to do well in this particular course or this exam. And so that's a big piece of this, is stepping back a little bit and saying, what is going on for me underneath? What are the fears? Are they something that is rational? Is it something that comes from my past? Do I own that piece? And go back to communicating with your partner, to saying, this is what's going on for me. It gets a little complicated sometimes if there's trauma involved, or if there was a complete neglect of sexual education growing up, that can be hard. But then that's why I say, educate yourself before you move into this to understand what sexuality is, why it's an important piece of a relationship and an important piece for you.
It's great. It really always comes back to educate and communicate, right? Those are two solid answers that we really need to emphasize as people move into marriage and being sexual with each other.
One thing you might do is reach out to other people who you know probably have a healthy view of sexuality and talk to them. Obviously, you want to ask permission from your partner, but you may reach out to a friend who's gone through a similar experience and say, what did you do? And get some validation around, this is normal. This happens. I think it's happening less and less, at least in my practice I've seen. I think it's happening less and less as we gain more knowledge around sex. But I think it is good to have, because that can be a very isolating experience, very lonely experience. And so maybe reach out to somebody who you know has a pretty healthy view of sexuality and connect with them.
Yeah, I really like that. I also like some research that's been coming out recently on sexual sanctification. So this idea that some religious people may experience more guilt, but we also see religious people experiencing heightened sexual satisfaction because they view it as this sanctified activity that God wants them to enjoy and appreciate. Just like you were describing, like, my maker made me this way, right? He or she really wants me to appreciate this aspect of who I am.
Yeah, absolutely. And there is some also, you know, just some physiological some people experience after an orgasm a release, and well, they'll feel a release, but a little bit of a letdown. And sometimes people will mistake that that lowered libido after having sex or making love and kind of that cooling off period as a little bit of guilt. And so they'll pair that physiological response with maybe guilt, and that shouldn't be there. So
yeah, that's a really important little warning to give to people. Well, so let's wrap it up with what other advice or tips you might give newlyweds, some parting wisdom.
And just to kind of wrap up with that, I think I'll start with going back to what I said, moving into this experience as a sexual intimate team. This is a part of your relationship that we can work on together. And with that being said, making sex a priority in your relationship. I think that's a big piece that we often miss, because life gets busy. Priorities start to shift and kids start coming. You've got other responsibilities with work and school and church and things. And so sex sometimes gets pushed down. And at the same time, we also need to balance that the research is really clear that sex is a very important part of a relationship, but it's not the end all be all. We sometimes set up sex that it is the ultimate form and expression of love. It's one of them, but it's not the end all be all. And couple it back with, it needs to be a priority in the relationship that the couple is discussing, that is, you know, this may sound odd, but putting it on calendars, putting it on your mind, that's actually can be very arousing. Some people say, oh, I don't want to plan sex. No, that's actually quite the opposite. The research shows that couples that plan sex are more likely to have sex and be more satisfied. So make it a priority. Make sure you're a sexual team. Get educated. I think that there's something to maybe reading one book a year. Make it a goal as a couple. We're going to read one book. I always tell couples, read at least one relationship book a year. And so maybe every other year it's a book around sexuality that obviously fits within your values. And I remember you even said, one of you said in one of your podcasts, I really like this idea about keeping a journal. I think there's something to be said about a sex journal, that this is what we're learning. This is what we're experiencing. This is what we want to do differently, and discussing that openly, and a personal journal, maybe even a couple journal. Because again, it goes back to that making a priority. And at the end of the day, really making sure that you're enhancing the emotional and other intimate parts of your relationship. Emotional intimacy, spiritual intimacy, romantic intimacy, all these different areas are going to add to your overall sex life. So that's an important piece, to make sure that your relationship is safe. Make sure your relationship is emotionally safe, obviously physically safe, is connecting. You're having lots and lots of connecting experiences, fun together. All of those things are going to add and play off of each other.
It's perfect. I love the irony of sex being a priority, but also understanding that it's not the end all be all, right? It needs to be something that we consistently give attention to, and understand that it is this beautiful way we can kind of take this little shortcut to intimacy. But if we're always taking the shortcut, then we're missing some of the emotional and meaning and spiritual and relational elements of intimacy that also need to be tended to. I like your idea of reading a book every year together on relationships. That's a great suggestion.
Yeah. And that's a big piece of this, is going back to what you were saying about making it a priority, that it's important, but it's also important to expand other areas of connecting. Sex can be a very connecting part of a relationship, but there are other parts that need to be nurtured as well.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Jeremy. This has been informative and fun. It's always so nice to visit with you.
Well, thank you so much. I always love learning from you, and this has been very informative for me as well. It's been a great pleasure to do this.
Likewise. That's it for this week. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Sexual Mindfulness Project, and subscribe to our website, shalomlevitt.com, to stay up to date with the latest information on sexual mindfulness. Thanks for listening.